Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
Americans were told that Obamacare would bring down prices and increase options. You were told that you could keep your plan and keep your doctor. You were given many, many false stories. The fact is, you were given many lies. Go with our plan. It's going to be terrific. You're going to be very, very happy. Call your local representative. Call your senator. Let them know that you're behind our plan.
That is President Trump on a video released within the last couple of hours, as you can hear, lobbying voters, I guess, to call the representatives to support the ACHA up for a vote on the House floor, we think, today. Bringing two new guests into the conversation, Adam Cankren is with us. He's a health policy reporter at Politico, and he's on Capitol Hill. Adam, welcome. Thank you for making time for us on a busy day. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
And Dave Daly is with us. He's the former editor-in-chief for Salon.com, and he's with us from Connecticut. And Dave, welcome to you. Good to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me, Carrie.
Adam, is there any indication that videos like the president's and some of the calls and meetings that he and Speaker Ryan have been doing are moving votes?
Well, it's kind of a very fluid situation at this point. Both the White House and House leadership are meeting with various factions of the Republican Party trying to flip a few of these final crucial votes. No indication that they have struck a deal and that they have the necessary votes at this point. Leadership is still very confident that when it comes down to it, they will get to 215, the number needed to pass the bill. But you still have both conservatives and moderates who are vowing to kind of have the votes here necessary to kill it. So still very fluid and uncertain whether they will have enough at this point.
And Adam, are they confident that they'll have the votes when they need them because of the tie of this bill to the rest of the president's agenda?
Exactly. Essentially, the argument that they're making is you may have your ideological quibbles with it. Conservatives may not think that it goes far enough. Moderates may think that it goes too far. At the end of the day, the message is you've been pledging for 7 years now to dismantle Obamacare as soon as you get the chance. Here's the chance. It's a once-in-a-lifetime chance, and you're not going to get a second bite of this apple. The second argument is exactly what you said. There is a very ambitious agenda here on immigration, on trade, on infrastructure. That is all held up by what's going on in healthcare. If you can't get this passed, there's very little chance, they're saying, that we're going to be able to get to all those other things down the road.
And Dave, do you buy this idea, big picture, that if they can't pass healthcare, and obviously there's a lot of members who think this is flawed, that this is really the uphill struggle to get tax reform and all the other things on the agenda? I mean, are they really connected?
Yes, I think they are. I think that if they fail here after having run for years and won the support of conservatives on a pledge to repeal Obamacare, that there could be a significant backlash and that the consequences of failure here could be very serious. The stakes involve a real blow to President Trump and to his reputation and image as a deal maker, as a leader, as a closer. Mm-hmm. But there's also a huge blow here possible to Paul Ryan, to his reputation and capacity to control a caucus. If he loses, you will probably start seeing stories very quickly about whether he can remain Speaker of the House. Wow. Remember, I mean, Mark Meadows, the head of the House Freedom Caucus, who is the big thorn in his side right now, is the man who filed the vacate the chair a movement that took down John Boehner as Speaker of the House. So this is very complicated, very serious, and a lot rests on it.
Dave, the Speaker didn't have to play this out this way. I mean, he didn't have to, you know, only spend 10 days letting members see the bill. You know, he made a lot of deliberate choices to do this way. That's part of the gamble, too. Go ahead.
He had a very complicated hand to play. I don't think this is anybody's idea of a perfect solution to the flaws in the system. Mm-hmm. But it is it's kind of a rickety deal designed to pull together the objections of conservatives like Meadows and also seems like it's possible to put through a a very complicated legislative path through the House and also the Senate. They want to be able to use the reconciliation process in the Senate so that they do not have to risk a Democratic filibuster. And you can only use the reconciliation if you can get the Senate parliamentarian to agree that this is related to the budget. So as a result, they can't include necessarily all of the things that conservatives want Paul Ryan's word on that will be in the bill, because they fear that the Senate parliamentarian will strip those pieces out. So the bind that Ryan finds himself in some ways is that conservatives want to see these very hardline things in this bill. A lot of the changes you are seeing to what insurers would be forced to include, what they would be forced to cover, changes to regulations, and the moderates are looking at those things and saying, well, if you include those, and there's a chance that they might be stripped out by the Senate parliamentarian, you're asking me to take a very, very hard vote that could lead me to a primary challenge or a loss.
Adam, will you speak to that? That's an important point of this.
Absolutely. And it's important to understand that the conservatives who are in what they call the House Freedom Caucus, a lot of them were elected and they ran on this idea of complete repeal of the ACA. And this is what they're saying. They're saying, you know, this bill essentially leaves the framework of Obamacare in place. And they want a full repeal. They're not really too worried about, at this point, what you replace it with. But you're right. You know, that idea of what can get through the Senate's procedural rules is really weighing heavily here. House leadership says, look, if we do something and it essentially violates those rules, you could kill the entire effort at this point. And then they would have to somehow rewrite a bill that can get bipartisan support. So it is a major issue at this point. One of the kind of concessions that they've given to the conservatives is this idea of, hey, we'll consider stripping out what they call the 10 essential health benefits. And essentially under Obamacare, every health plan has to offer a certain minimum level of benefits. Conservatives want that gone, but there is still some question about whether that stripping out that provision would pass the Senate's procedural rules.
Call here from Jane in Hayward, Wisconsin. Hey, Jane, appreciate you waiting. Hi.
No problem. Thanks for taking my call.
Of course.
I just want to weigh in. So I'm a small business owner. I voted Republican, and I am definitely behind this bill getting passed through. I spend over $12,000 currently on the ACA program, and that doesn't even cover everything that I need. As a small business owner, I do have to say, you can't spend more than you make. If you don't have the money, you can't spend it. You have to stay within your limit. So that's where I stand on this. And like I said, I voted Republican, and I'm behind it.
Really glad you heard the show, Jane, and that you had a chance to call in. I mean, Adam, so this bill, this kind of speaks to what you were saying. Get something through, and we'll work on it, but fulfill the commitment we made to voters like Jane and others.
Absolutely, and that's the argument that House leadership is making. The issue is you know, if you ran on it, what were you running on? Were you running on a full repeal of Obamacare, or were you running on, hey, we'll leave some of the framework in place and fix the system? That is kind of, you know, the division there. And there is real worry among leadership and among some of the more centrist, some of the more moderate Republicans about some of these projections, this projection that the bill could cost could end up leaving 24 million more people uninsured than otherwise over a decade, that it would leave older Americans, 50 to 64, right under the Medicare eligibility age, leave them with much, much higher premiums than they're used to now.
Right.
There are kind of some serious concerns about what down the road this might do to people's health care.
Just for listeners who missed our first hour, we talked about a lot of the details that Adam is bringing up here, the specifics of the economics of health care. You'll be able to find that on the podcast, by the way, very soon. Call here from Anita in Edina. Hi, Anita. Welcome.
Hello. Good morning.
Hi. What are you thinking about?
I look at this. I'm a Democrat. I voted, did not vote for Donald Trump. And I worked for 30 years for a Great Society program, Upward Bound, a TRIO program. And so I'm looking at what's going on right now in Congress, and it seems to me like this is somehow throwing a gauntlet down in the Republican Party between the Freedom Caucus and the old established party, Mitch McConnell, not to mention the Democrats and so forth. And so I'm looking at somebody like Lyndon Johnson, who got the Great Society programs funded, and he brought together Southern legislators. You know, I see him as a strong man, but yet he had the ability to also offer carrots to kind of work people and get a consensus and get this that passed, which just, you know, really blows my mind when I think about it. Then I look at Donald Trump, who I see as really having no political experience. He was all over the place in what he promised, and now he's trying to make it work by beating people up.
So, okay. All right. Anita, I think I have the essence of what you say. Dave, I want to note that the president is deeply involved in basically whipping votes here. I mean, he's taken these meetings. He recorded that video we played. He's rolled up his sleeves and gotten involved in this. How much does that matter, do you think?
I do not think he wants to have the first test of his ability to move an agenda through Congress go down in a defeat. It's interesting that your caller brings up Lyndon Johnson, because in many ways, the creation of Medicare looms in the background of this. I mean, Johnson essentially made up and lowballed the costs of Medicare, and that made it really difficult for conservatives and other opponents at the time to attack it back in the 1960s. As a result, it really sailed through Congress. It was in response to that that you get the Congressional Budget Office in the 1970s. It's in response to that that you get the reconciliation process. So a lot of the current debate is very much informed by the way Medicare was passed in the 1960s.
Dave Daly with us, if you've tuned in as we talk about the politics of this. He's an author and a former editor at Salon.com, and Adam Cancren with us, a healthcare reporter at Politico. He has a very busy day. He's on the Hill. Grateful for his time as well. Adam, I wanted to ask you about how much it matters that AARP, the Hospital Association, other industry associations are opposed to this bill, and that influential governors like John Kasich and Brian Sandoval of Nevada are also opposed to it. I mean, how much does that really matter?
Well, it depends on who you ask, I guess. It's been kind of one of the surprising things back in 2010 when Democrats were trying to get Obamacare passed. There was, at the end, a major outreach to try and get as many interest groups on board.
I remember
behind
that.
The bill.
Right.
Here, there has not been that level of outreach among House Republicans. Now, the situation is different in the Senate, but among House Republicans, they have been very intent on essentially writing this bill and getting it passed. And there really hasn't been any concern at this point about winning over the hospitals and the insurers and some of these interest groups like AARP. Now, in the Senate, that is much more of a concern. And I think it's kind of the reality that whatever comes over from the House, if it makes it over, is going to need some major revisions in the Senate, because there are concerns about how AARP feels about this, how the hospitals feel about this. At some point, you need to get some of those interest groups to get on board.
So the interest groups would hope to be influential in what the Senate does if a bill eventually gets to the Senate, and then they do this conference committee work, yes?
Absolutely. Yeah, from the groups that I talk to a lot on the hospital and doctor side, they tell me that they're frustrated that they feel like, you know, there has been very little interest in getting their input on the House side. And essentially, they are really hoping that when it goes to the Senate, that they're going to be able to work a little bit more constructively. Their main points essentially are they don't want to see any of the coverage gains under Obamacare go away.
Mm-hmm.
So this idea of leaving 24 million more uninsured than otherwise, that is a major issue for them. And so they're saying, look, before we do anything else, we need to kind of slow down this process and figure out how we can get that number lower or to zero, because it's a major roadblock.
And Dave, we should say why the Hospital Association is worried about that, because then people that don't have coverage show up at the ER, and the hospital actually has to eat the costs of that.
I think that's exactly right. And among these essential health benefits, that the 10 essential health benefits that the Freedom Caucus would like to see pulled out of this bill, it includes things like emergency medical care. You know, it includes wellness. It includes lots of maternity care. Mm-hmm. So I think that there is a serious concern that if you strip all of these things out of the bill and simply offer a tax credit to people, that the kind of insurance packages that they get will be so threadbare as to not cover basic needs.
Call here from Victoria in St. Louis Part. Hi, Victoria. Welcome.
Hi.
Hi. What's your question? Yeah.
Okay, my question is, I don't understand why business owners and the GOP aren't the biggest fans of a national health system, one payer. It would divorce businesses and employees and employers from being tied to health care through where they work. Why not get rid of the headache and just have a national health care? I don't understand why they're not the biggest fans of that.
Dave, tackle that if you would.
Well, I think it has to do with where the money comes from. My sense would be that what you are seeing here, especially from those in the Freedom Caucus, is that they have no problem with insurance being offered, but they want the free market to govern that. They want people to have to be able to choose what they want and do not want covered, and they are more interested in bringing the cost of insurance down than they are in broadening the number of people who have access.
Adam, I have to say, this getting rid of these essential benefits seems highly risky. I mean, they basically wipe out a lot of what people use their health insurance for, don't they?
It is. And it's at the end of the day, I think it comes down to a philosophical difference. The Democrats believe that, look, you need to set a minimum bar, right? You need to hold insurers and insurance companies to a certain standard to ensure that they that people are getting what they need. Republicans, however, say, look, you should be able to choose a plan that fits your needs. So they're saying, you know, what they want to do is not give you a plan that has nothing, but they want you to be able to customize it as much as possible. So if you are a young male, ideally you should be able to pick a plan that maybe doesn't have maternity coverage. It's one of those things that's just kind of a philosophical difference. And Republicans believe that if you get rid of these essential health benefits, then you open up insurers to be able to design plans that might fit the needs of people a little bit better.
Adam, just a quick question here, because I see CNN is reporting right now that 24 House Republicans are saying they are a no vote and 8 more are leaning that way. How parliamentarily, how long can Speaker Ryan push the actual vote occurrence? You know what I mean? Can he go past midnight, or how does this work?
Well, there's really no penalty for delaying the vote, and that's you know, one of the kind of the interesting things. Today is the 7th anniversary of Obamacare's passage, and I think there's a symbolism there that Republicans would very much like to have. At the same time, if they don't have the 215 votes, you face a question. Do you put it on the floor and roll the dice and hope that somebody turns, or do you delay the vote a day or a week? Obviously, every day you delay pushes back the rest of the Trump agenda by that period. But look, at the end of the day, if you don't have the votes, it's tough to kind of put it on the floor and watch it fail.
Adam, thanks so much for the time. Busy day for you, I know.
Thank you.
Dave, really good to have your insight and your experience on this. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much.
And of course, you can listen if you missed part of these 2 hours, this special coverage on health care and this vote that is supposed to take place on the House. You can find it on the podcast. Also, look for that health care roundtable. Live audience in the NPR forum, doctors and health graduate policy students. Really good one. Covered a lot of ground, and you can find that on the podcast as well.